they are more vulnerable now than they have ever been in terms of money getting shut off. We have one bank that's already disinvested. We have Wells Fargo sending out letters to people who have objected, saying that they're willing to sit down with our elders and our leaders. We have millions of dollars that have been moved already through Move Your Money campaigns to get people to divest from banks that are supporting the pipeline. We need to hit on that front harder than ever. We need people to disrupt their banks. We need people to shut down banks that are funding this pipeline. We need people to move their money and make sure that their financial institutions know exactly why they're moving their money. This is where we have the most power now, and that's actually a really beautiful thing, because people can do this from wherever they are. Like, we don't need to be able to get to Standing Rock in order to be a part of the front line, you know, as we think about it, because we can create front lines in cities around the country. There is a front line waiting to be created outside of every Wells Fargo, outside of every Chase Bank, and we can all be doing this, but we need to see this as a moment of expansion in this struggle and not a moment of resolution.
That's it for the Best of Counterspin for 2016. Counterspin is produced by FAIR, the Media Watch Group based in New York. You can find all of our shows on our website, fair.org. The show is engineered by Alex Noyes. I'm Janine Jackson. As always, we thank you for listening to Counterspin.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM.
KBOO Community Radio is in this year's Willamette Week Give Guide. The Give Guide highlights 140 local nonprofits doing some great work. But give to KBOO and Give Guide today and help us highlight the impact community radio has throughout the Willamette Valley. The Give Guide is an easy, secure way to make a gift to KBOO. You get Chinook book discounts, free great stuff, and your donation receipt right in your inbox. If you aren't a KBOO member yet, now's the time to join. Your Give Guide contribution will be matched one-to-one. In fact, extra gifts to KBOO will be matched too. It's a great way to help us secure our challenge match. Go to kboo.fm and click on the yellow banner on the top of the screen. Thank you for supporting KBOO.
Tune into KBOO every weekday at 7 p.m. for Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective with Davey D. Hard Knock Radio features in-depth interviews and profiles with community leaders, activists, hip-hop artists, and musicians, giving voice to community concerns and offering a unique forum to explore issues relevant to hip-hop community. That's every weekday at 7 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
The Oregon Cultural Trust's mission is to lead Oregon in cultivating, growing, and valuing culture as an integral part of communities. KBOO is a longtime Cultural Trust partner. This means that if you make a donation to the Cultural Trust equal to your KBOO membership, your Cultural Trust donation will come back to your dollar. Will come back to you dollar for dollar when you claim your state cultural tax credit. Donating to the Cultural Trust is easy when you make a contribution to KBOO through the gift guide. Go to kboo.fm and click on the yellow banner on top of the screen. We'll be right back.
at the dawn of the day. All the darkened kitchens, the mill of gray, all touched by the radiance that the sun discloses.
Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses.
Hey there, good evening. This is Bread and Roses, if you couldn't tell by the theme song that just played. It is Feminist News and Public Affairs on the KBO airwaves since 1978, the longest running feminist radio broadcast program in the country. Bread and Roses is a collective of women and non-binary radio activists who give voice to those in global and local spaces, working for social justice and equity, and we strive to challenge systems of oppression. All this, and we have fun. We want our bread and roses too, get it? I'm your host tonight, Pamela Santos, and I'm here with the other wonderful people of our collective who are going to introduce themselves as well.
I'm Cheryl.
I'm Celeste.
I'm Poochie.
And our engineer is Adam.
Woo!
Yeah, Adam.
Okay, so I think you've been hearing it a little bit on KBO already. We're going to talk about the year that just is getting down to a close. But just before, you know, do not get tempted to turn the dial, please. We actually have new material. We have a mix of new material that we didn't get to air during one of our shows. And also, we're going to be recapping a few of the... we've done some shows that really have put a finger on the pulse of what's been going on in 2016. We're going to be talking about Standing Rock. We're definitely going to be talking about queer issues, white feminism, and everything that's coming up. I mean, just recognize that, yes, 2016 has been referred to as trash fires that have never stopped burning.
What?
Also, dumpster fires, I've heard.
Dumpster fires.
Yeah. I have not heard that. Wow.
And all the different ways that John Oliver has compared 2016 in very colorful ways that we can't always say on these airwaves. Mm-mm. But we've also had great things happen. And by great, I mean been blessed by the great one, Beyonce.
Yeah.
You like my... Yeah, that was a good one. Segue. That was a good
one. Smooth. There's a couple blessings this year, musically.
Her sister.
Yeah.
That's Solange. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we've done, other than play really great music throughout the year, I did a whole episode on Beyonce's Lemonade. Mm-hmm. And when that dropped, we also had someone who has been on the show before, Kiki Nicole, a wonderful, amazing poet who has so much heart that it cannot be contained just in one space. We're going to be putting it back on the airwaves again. So we have that first coming up right now. And for a little bit of reference, we started out with a little bit of Beyonce to begin it.
Y'all haters corny with that Illuminati mess. Paparazzi catch my fly and my cocky fresh. I'm so reckless when I rock my Givenchy dress. I'm so possessive, so I rock his rock necklaces. My daddy Alabama, mama Louisiana. You mix that Negro with that Creole, make a Texas Bama.
Because Beyonce just played, I would love to read a short piece that I did. This is Erasure Blackout Poetry of the lyrics from Formation. Bitch, I'm that mess. I'm so possessive with my Negro. I did not come to play with you hoes. I came, bitch, with my Negro hair and Negro nose. All this country ass black. I take what's mine. When I say I hate white people, what I mean is I'm tired. What I mean is even breathing has become exhausting. What I mean is the skin keeps laughing at me and I don't know what to do anymore. What I mean is there is always a thunderstorm going on in my throat. What I mean is these hands are never allowed to be soft. What I mean is clenched fist. What I mean is swallowed tongue. What I mean is the mirror keeps saying I mean nothing to my face. What I mean is I get it. I hate me too. What I mean is too heavy. What I mean is I don't know where I come from. What I mean is I keep running to find a home, but I have nowhere to run to. What I mean is there is no home for me but on my back. What I mean is there is no shelter. What I mean is safety is an urban legend I think about when looking at the cracks on the sidewalk. What I mean is sidewalks are usually coffins for dead black bodies. What I mean is this body cannot be a home until it is no longer a threat. What I mean is this body is only good when dead and lying on its back. What I mean is gunshot wound. What I mean is I am lonely in the way the bullet longs for a body. What I mean is my white friends will not feel this ache in their chests. What I mean is grieving is such a lonely condition. What I mean is I think it is my permanent condition. What I mean is I think I have a phantom limb for a heart. What I mean is we die every day. What I mean is I am dying a silent death. What I mean is I am dying every day. What I mean is death. What I mean is tears. What I mean is never enough. What I mean is I will never be enough. What I mean is exactly what I said in the first place. I mean, never mind. It doesn't matter. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thank I know.
So that was Kiki Nicole, and I'm not even going to set up too much the next one because we're doing this all, it's all related. Just letting you know, it's all related. Cheryl, just let us know who is speaking right now. The next clip that we have is for Leslie.
Oh, Leslie Gregory. Yeah, so Leslie runs Right to Health, which is a nonprofit healthcare organization that provides outreach and education and also medical care for people healing from racist trauma. And we talked at length about her campaign to get the CDC to declare racism the public health threat that it is, which they won't do. And in this segment from that interview, she's talking about experiences that she has talking about racism with white people.
Mm. One of the things that I've asked people to do is, you know, yes, this is another talk about racism. Raise your hand if you're feeling uncomfortable. Not one person would raise their hand. Okay. I'd say, okay, it's okay. You don't have to admit it. I'm not trying to out you. If you are uncomfortable in this moment, do me a favor. Look at yourself and realize your first impulse is to say, I'm uncomfortable. I'm stopping right now. Okay. So just for an academic exercise, don't do that. Just sit here. You're safe. Nobody's going to come, you know, tar and feather you. Nobody's going to stand up and go, you're racist. You know, just sit here in your own quiet mind. You know, close your eyes. Turn and face that discomfiture. Okay? Just turn and sit in it for a minute. Experience it. I promise. Blood pressure ain't going to go up. You'll be all right. Look inside yourself. What is it that's making you uncomfortable right now? Is it that someone has called you a racist, or is it in fact the possibility that you could be? While you're sitting there, just thinking about it, just feeling what it feels, this something ain't right, okay, that you're feeling in this moment, Take a deep breath. Go inside. Where is it in your body that you're feeling it? Are you having a headache? You're grinding your teeth? You feel your gut tighten up? You got your neck tight? What does it feel like to feel uncomfortable in the moment that you might be a racist? If you have a body symptom, go there. Go into it. It's okay. You know, every once in a while, I'll have a person come to me after the conversation. It won't be in the middle of everybody because we're not raising our hand. We're not going to talk about this. But after it's all over, I'll have people come over to me and say, you know, at first, something just wasn't right. I couldn't identify any place in my body where the problem was. But as I was sitting there for a while, I started to feel like there was something, you know, a little stitch over here in the right, a little tension back in my lumbar spine. You know, I just couldn't quite relax my shoulders. And I was like, brilliant. That's all you were supposed to do. Now, just pretend that you can never escape that. Pretend that you can never not feel like something's just not right. That you go to sleep at night, something's not right. You wake up in the morning, something's not right. Driving down the street, something's not right. You go to work, you go to school, you shop, you got your life, everything going on. Even in your most private, intimate moments with your lover, something's not right. Now, just imagine what it would feel like that all the time. From cradle to grave. Whatever you're doing, something's just not right. All the time. Do you think that would shorten your life? That's all I'm asking. If you think it would shorten your life, you just might be an anti-racist because you don't like it.
Wow.
Damn.
So I'm going to let that sit in a little bit before we get into the next clip. So just paying attention, this next one is stuff that hasn't aired before. But I just want to let everyone just like sit in this a little bit. What Leslie described for me is what I feel all the time of not being able to explain to white people that all of these feelings, all of these, it's the death of a thousand cuts kind of microaggressions. And it was I like this clip, Cheryl, by the way, that because she got to get into that headspace. So the only thing that I'm going to do to set up this next part of it is we started talking about Lena Dunham coming up in the headlines back in September. And by the way, this is radio. Everyone had eye rolls all in the studio right this second. Yeah. Like a million eye rolls.
Clackety, clackety, clack. Mm. Yeah.
Right? And
speaking of public health threats.
Yes. True. Oh, and this is the way, I mean, Leslie's describing what it means when you really are not comfortable with that, to be anti-racist in your action, not just your thoughts. And so this is a person really going off the cuff, and we had ended up talking to a couple of people, and we're hoping to make it a regular feature once we can actually fit it in, feminist headlines. I'm just going to get right into it. It's kind of speaking for itself. Starting off for this first edition of Feminist Headlines, we also have a special guest who just happened to be here in the studio. May I please introduce the wonderful Jamila. So you are a host for Guess Who's Coming to Radio.
Greetings.
And I'm going to introduce our other members of the Bread and Roses Collective.
My name is Mason.
And my name is Cheryl.
When we're talking about things on headlines for Bread and Roses, we're going to be talking about things in a way that we are going to be disrupting the kinds of misogyny, patriarchy, systems that really are oppressing really all of society, right? I'm going to go with the ugly first, okay? There's the good, bad, and ugly, but let's just go with ugly, okay?
Yes.
So one of the things that happened
It was recently part of the Lenny Letter installment that Lena Dunham distributes. And what's interesting about this is it's not even just really about her. She's actually interviewing somebody else. She's interviewing, who is it? Amy Schumer. Okay. So Amy Schumer, she's in this. And despite, you know, other things I also find problematic sometimes about Amy Schumer, probably didn't deserve having all of the spotlight kind of taken away from this interview. I will say it's not necessarily her fault that the spotlight was taken, because Lena Dunham decided to really just bring all sorts of attention to herself, which is interesting because the story that she talks about is about her not getting attention. So she's not getting attention when she goes to the Met Gala and she's seated next to the athlete Odell Beckham Jr. So one of the things about this particular issue that happened, where she talked about an African-American athlete, Odell Beckham Jr., in a way that really is creating and imagining this entire inner monologue for him without ever talking to him. Basically, she imagined that because she doesn't look like the model-esque actresses at the Met Gala, that he wasn't interested in talking to her. He would rather be on his phone. But to go even further, that he's probably thinking that she's this shape or that or whatever it could be, right? And so making a lot of assumptions without ever talking to him. Not only that, she's saying this not just, I'm going to say this to my friends, you know, one-on-one. She put this in a public forum. Like, this is a space that she controls. This is the power that she has. We're going to be talking about something where the concept of it, if I can even say what it is before we name it, it's of assuming that what happens with white feminists when they really don't take a racial lens to what they're doing, let's say. How about that? We're using this to talk about what, Jamila?
The toxicity of white feminism.
So Michael B. Jordan was the other thirst trap like focus of Lena Dunham, where she's tweeting, she's like, I don't care, I'm gonna rev on Michael B. Jordan until I'm a married grandma. I don't care, I'm just gonna do stuff to him without his consent.
So you're sexually assaulting somebody, but that's okay. But if he said something to you, what? That's how Emmett Till got killed, you know. I'm just saying, like, learn some history, lady. There was a woman recently who, there was a man of African descent who was walking up to her to ask her a question, and she yells, rape.
Oh, yeah, I saw that video. Mm-hmm.
There was a man who's like visiting his mom, and he was like at the apartment complex, and he walked up to the woman just like recording her, and she just started yelling rape like over and over.
So that this is the world Lena Dunham clearly has no awareness of, or whatever. Ugh.
But this is the problem with white feminism, is that she can couch everything in her just, I'm progressive and unapologetic. Like, don't criticize me. You know, women just have had it so hard, and am I supposed to be a sex object? Am I supposed to not want to be looked at? And, you know, I'm wearing a tuxedo, and I look like a marshmallow.
And
I'm breaking
gender binaries by wearing a tie.
Yeah. And so, therefore, I should expect this guy will respond to me. I'm going to just assume he's straight. I'm going to assume he wants my white body. And if he doesn't, that's what makes him a problem. Like, everything ableist that she says, everything racist that she says, she can rationalize it as, I'm so progressive, and I don't know, and I'm trying. And I hate when white feminism tries to use unapologeticness to excuse total nonsense.
Black Twitter has already come for her, where it was actually black women who've been saying that she's like Teflon. Nothing sticks every time she does something.
I do want to mention in that same, I didn't read the whole thing. I read portions of, yeah, what is it, the Lenny Letter. There was also in that Lenny Letter a defense of a co-writer of, was it Amy Schumer's show? And the co-writer was a rape apologist. And he had several Twitter entries which were, you know, apologizing for rape or defending it. And so in this Lenny Letter, they actually defended this guy because they knew him. And So, you know, they're rationalizing his rape apology because, well, he didn't rape anyone.
And that they straight up said that in the piece.
To frame it that way, it's just joking. Who draws the line for what's just joking? No, I didn't mean it that way. And so this defense of, but they don't mean it that way, is so, so toxic because it shuts everybody down. And then, boo-hoo, you're being so mean to me for calling me out. It is just, I mean, I couldn't finish the letter. And I was so horrified that I clicked on it and gave her a click.
But I didn't anyway. Even, yeah, I didn't even see that letter, but I've seen like over the last few days, like Amy Schumer, who also is a white feminist, and like it shows again like how toxic white feminism is, because Amy Schumer herself, like in her comedy, if that's what you want to call it, has like made jokes about raping people, like herself like perpetuating it, and doesn't see that as being like the same as a man being a rapist for some reason. And she's also like the same lines like, oh, it's a joke though, like I'm a comedian. But it's like another line of like the toxicity of white feminism is that people not seeing like if like a woman raped a man, then it wouldn't be the same because men are usually the rapists, when that's definitely not gonna solve anything ever.
When we're talking to you, dear listeners, we are talking to you in a lot of ways without maybe identifying like our backgrounds and whatnot. We just want to have a blank slate sometimes when we're talking about topics or interviewing other people. But in a lot of ways, when we're talking about things like this, where race and gender intersect, and we're talking about different things, that it almost feels like I want to kind of identify that in the room. I mean, we only have, like, of us here in the studio right now, we have one person of African descent. And even though I am a woman of color, I'm still not a person of African descent. So there's ways in talking about things where we are going to pretty much acknowledge that, yes, we can all have opinions and really do the work to try to unpack issues, but if we don't center on the people most affected or the people that are affected by the issue, then we're doing a disservice. We're actually taking advantage of privilege. And so at any time, even for myself, just to acknowledge that I can be a person of color, but I'm still not going to have any of the kinds of oppressions that people of African descent are having historically and currently. And in the ways that when we even cover this, you know, it's always important to just think about that, even as you're educating yourselves, dear listeners.
I wanted to add that white feminism is an ideology. So it's not that I happen to be a feminist and I'm white or I'm of European descent. For me, everything is based on ideology, a series of ideas put into action in many ways. And so someone who is not of European descent can also be a white feminist. People who control the narrative are profiting off of seeing people battle each other. And white feminism does not respect that. It's sort of like this idea of, you know, people are battling, you know, black, white, whatever, racism. And people don't understand that we're all pawns in that game. And if we work together, then we'll see. That doesn't mean, oh, you know, all lives matter. No, I am not into that. But what I am saying is that, you know, we're all working class, and then there's people who control the narratives. But to recognize the context of history and the rape of African women and men, and the fact that we were sold, we were the product. The reason why this country is going the way it is because of the sale of African people. Wall Street is based on the sale of African people. This economy is driven by the pillaging of Africa. White feminism is toxic because it doesn't make those connections. As Kimberly Crenshaw coined, intersectionality. That is important. So if you're not going to go out there and march for African lives, then how can you call yourself a feminist? If you're not going to go and march honoring the murders of trans women of African descent, then how can you call yourself a feminist? If you're not going to speak to women who have been murdered by the state, how are you a feminist? How dare you call yourself a feminist if you're a feminist based on your own interests?
So it's toxic. White feminism is a toxic ideology, and you're defending men who work on you on plots with you or scripts, and it doesn't work that way. If you consider yourself a feminist, you have to be fighting gentrification, land grabbing. You have to be, you really have to be making all of those connections, because land resources, you call Mama Africa, Mother Earth. Like, if you're not fighting for Mother Earth, how can you even say you're a feminist? So that's how I feel about it. That's my long commentary.
I love Jamila. Jamila is just so real.
If you are listening right now, it is Bread and Roses on KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM. We have been recapping some old stuff, but this one last clip was something we haven't aired before, and we want to do more regularly, feminist headlines. Poochie.
Now.
So we jumped around a lot. We've talked about blackness with Kiki Nicole's poem, which I love, also just being able to say, which I have had to say, is I don't hate white people. I hate white supremacy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I hate the oppression that comes from this institutional racism that has been passed down for many generations. Mm-hmm. And the comments that we talked about with Lena Dunham, and also Amy Schumer didn't even get, you know, much fire from that, also has done problematic things since September. But Lena's also said those really inflammatory, I was going to say problematic, but they're honestly just like offensive, comments about abortion. Do you want to just like talk briefly about that?
Listen. Okay. Lena Dunham, I highly doubt you're listening to this, but
just in case,
let's hope we never meet on the street. That's all I'm going to say. Because I got peace of my mind. Yeah, she said she was in another podcast interview, I think it was. I don't know. I just read the article. I didn't even... honestly, I didn't even know who Amy... I knew who Amy Schumer was. I didn't know who Lena Dunham was until she did the whole thing about the Met Gala. Because I'm poor. I can't afford to watch HBO. I don't know about girls. Like
Insecure, so much better.
Also, I can't watch... I'm not going to watch a show that's based in New York and it has no people of color in it. Mm. Like, my mom is from New York. Like, No. It makes no sense. But, yeah, she said this... She was at a podcast and she says... They're talking about abortion, and she's talking about how she's been to clinics, and she felt like she didn't belong, like in that space, you know.
She
because,
wanted to say
because she had never had an abortion before, and she goes, "It made me wish I'd had an abortion." You know, and this is someone who's, and at least my knowledge, has never been pregnant. Obviously, she doesn't have any children. She's never had to deal with that, that heavy like burden, or stress. And when I heard that, I was just, oh my God, I just didn't even know, like. I have had an abortion. So for me, it just felt like a slap in the face. I was like, you know, I had to go to another town because I felt ashamed. You know, I felt like I was going to be like another stereotypical like Latina, just another Puerto Rican girl, you know, getting pregnant at 18. Just like I felt ashamed. I went to another town because I was afraid I was going to bump into people that knew me. I had to drop like $300 to pay for my abortion, you know, and I get paid people in Puerto Rico get paid $7.25 an hour. Mm-hmm. Like I was like, I don't have money for this. And I had to go in with just local anesthesia. Mm-hmm. I could not afford to pay
an extra $50 for extra anesthesia so that they could put me to sleep. And the pain was ridiculous, like, you know, and I knew it was like the responsible thing to do. I was 18. I was in college. I had these plans of leaving the islands and going and studying abroad, which, you know, I'm here in Portland. So, you know, and it was just like I'm still healing from that. And I'm 21. I'm going to be 22. And that's still something that affects me to this day, like, you know. And it's just a really intense thing. And yeah, some women have better experiences because of maybe like their resources and their access and their education.
But soon we're going to have only one, if not zero, places to be able to have an abortion in Louisiana and Texas, I think. Mm. I'm not completely giving correct information here, but just saying, like, you went to another town.
Yeah, but I went to another town.
People have to go to another state.
Mm-hmm. Like, well, I mean,
right? Like, imagine
if that had been the case in Puerto Rico, wow. I would have been in a lot of trouble. Mm. Like, if I had had to leave Puerto Rico, that's like the cheapest ticket to, like, I would have, what, flown to Dominican Republic, like, mm-hmm. for an abortion? Like, that's insane. And I'm sure there's people in the Caribbean that have to do that mm-hmm. as well. Like, I'm sure that there's people in the Caribbean that have to do that, in other islands of the Caribbean that have, I'm sure there's people from the Virgin Islands, maybe, privileged thing.
So what I'm thinking about is how it feels to me like a kind of tourism. I think Lena Dunham perhaps exercises what could be called the artist's kind of impulse to experience things. And I mean, the character that she plays and writes on Girls is somebody that just does these wild, supposedly wild, not vanilla, not mainstream kind of experiences so that she has something to write for her essays and for her ebook and random things, and some to want the experience that other women have just so that she could say what I think in that particular time that she was telling somebody is that she's volunteering, but it dawned on her that maybe she should tell this young woman at an abortion clinic that I've never experienced this, just so you know, like, I'm here helping you, but I've never experienced this. But and that in itself, and if she stopped there, it would have been fine.
That's totally fine. Right? Like, if I was at the abortion clinic and somebody came up to me like, listen, I'm volunteering here. I've never had an abortion, but I'm volunteering here. I wouldn't feel bad about that. I would feel like, damn, I have this support. Like, you know, you haven't had an abortion, but that you're still not shaming me for it. You're not making me feel bad. You're putting your time in this clinic so that I can feel safe and comfortable. You know, but she's like, I wish I had had an abortion. Like, that's like, you know, even if Lena Dunham was in a moment where she had an abortion now, like, she still has, she has money, she has resources, she has the ability to travel to another country if she wanted to like, pay for an abortion. And she has the money to pay for the extra anesthesia.
I wish we can keep talking about all of this. We definitely have so many shows for you, 2017, to come for all of this. Here's the other, I think it's a great show. Cheryl, could you set up this next part and why we had it come after this white feminism segment?
Is this Gigi? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this was an interview I did earlier this summer for my podcast, and it was on KBOO with filmmaker Gigi Williams, her daughter, an actress, Ashley Nicole Williams, and a counselor, Dory Lyon. And Gigi was sexually assaulted as a young person and really continues decades later to face the repercussions. And she did get pregnant from that, from that sexual assault. So she made a short film that kind of dramatizes the experience and tries to really bring to light what these consequences, these traumatizing consequences are, and what it's like to not have the family support and to be ostracized. And so the film is called Angela's Sacred Heart, and here in this clip we're about to hear is Gigi talking about some of these experiences around making the film.
I decided to want to tell the story
so that it could help other people and raise awareness about the traumatizing impact that it can have on you. And long-term as well. I don't think enough is being done about this. I don't think enough is being talked about this. And probably because, you know, of the shame and the guilt and all the feelings you have around it and being blamed for it. Like somehow it's your fault and you caused it because you shouldn't have had too much to drink and you shouldn't have been wearing that outfit. And it puts the woman in responsibility. And it takes two people. And the man is also responsible. And that really does get overlooked a lot. And I wanted to share that. Roger Ebert said that movies is a machine that generates empathy. And I think that's what we need in this world. I think that's what we need in this country. We just don't have enough empathy for one another.
It's interesting what you said about the media and empathy, because we have tons of media addressing this, but we don't have the empathy yet. And I think what's missing is more people with the direct lived experience being in control of which stories are told and how they're told. This topic exists in the movies, but it's not working to help end
it. It's not working. It's not. When I was younger and I was coming up, I couldn't talk to anyone about it. There's a stigma attached to it. You know, I wanted to go to college. I had all these dreams that I wanted to fulfill for myself and my life, and I got totally sidelined by it. And my relatives and my family, my parents, my cousins and aunts and uncles, they totally ostracized me from the rest of the family. I mean, when I look at my life today, I can see that it's been a long journey and I have accomplished a lot under the circumstances. I think I've done quite well for myself. That's basically the reason why I wanted to do this film, is to be an inspiration, not only for other young women out there to know that they're not alone and there's help out there available for them. And if I can do it, then they can make it through too somehow. I think somebody needs to just like be the light keeper, the lighthouse or something and say, come this way. I got your back and you're not the only one out there. When we were talking about making the film, we were surprised by the reaction. Mm-hmm. So many people that we talked to said, I'm so glad you're doing this. And it happened to me.
Yes.
Or they knew someone who it had happened to, mm-hmm. their sister, mm-hmm. their mother. It's becoming like a normal thing. Just like young men being, you know, profiled by the police. I mean, it should be the exception to the rule, right. Not the norm. Right. It takes a lot sometimes. But, you know, you have that determined spirit and the willingness to want to grow, the willingness to want to heal, you know, the willingness and the love for yourself that you deserve to heal, that you deserve to live a happy life. You deserve to be loved and respected and honored and treated well. And I believe that when things start coming up consistently, it's a red flag. And it's like, pay attention to this. Watch what's happening. We can't continue like this anymore.
Right.
You know, That's what happened in Nazi Germany. So many people died until finally people started to pay attention. We just need more people to be courageous and more people to come forward and more people, you know, to support this work. You know, we don't want people to forget and we don't want them to go back into their complacency again. When the civil rights movement was taking place, it was just such an exciting time because change was in the air. And these people really were committed to that change and passionate about it. And people were flying from all over the world to march with Martin Luther King and people like that when they could see it on television, the news, what was actually happening. And so I think that's where media can have a powerful mm-hmm. impact. Women need to help women. Women need to help women. Yes. Women need to support each other. Yes. That's where we're going to get our power from.
That was Gigi Williams. Next up, a clip from Danica Brown talking about Standing Rock. We always welcome new collective members, and if you're interested in joining us as a producer, host, or engineer, no experience necessary, please contact KBOO's volunteer coordinator, volunteer@kboo.org.
My name's Danica Brown, and I'm a member of the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma. I'm White Crane Clan, and I'm Scottish of the Ross Clan, and I'm currently a doctoral student at Portland State University in the School of Social Work, conducting research with my tribe on how historical trauma impacts our community and the healing and transformation of that trauma, specifically around the Trail of Tears. I was asked to come out to Standing Rock with some sisters to support them in solidarity of the work that's going on there currently. And I was there for 3 weeks in September. So I was actually asked to go out to Standing Rock to help develop a woman's camp. One of the things that we learned when we went out there, and that's very, very clear, is that this is a woman-centered, women's-driven movement. It's the women and elders who are making decisions about this action and how things are going to go. And it's the women, in my experience, who have been pushing this action and encouraging people to come out. And then within that, also organizing actions, but also supporting all of the people who are coming out to Standing Rock. So not only are they doing a lot of the direct action work and being on the front lines, they're also doing a lot of the emotional labor in the background, the cooking, the cleaning, the feeding, the helping, the, you know, taking care of children and taking care of elders. So they're doing a lot of that work. They really felt the need that there be a space for women to be able to go and feel safe and process, and that was kind of centered on traditional values and beliefs around women. Because one of the things that was also pretty clear there is that there's a lot of internalized colonization that's kind of playing itself out, and I won't go into the details about that, but that a lot of that internalized colonization in my experience was centered around gender and gender roles there. And a lot of it was also generational. So there's kind of this older group of people who have a very specific idea about what they consider to be traditional gender roles. And then there's this kind of younger group of people coming in who have a more kind of critical analysis around gender and roles. And what that means is, like, there were a lot of two-spirit people there, or people who did not identify within a binary context. They identified as non-binary, and it seemed like a lot of folks didn't know how to deal with that. So we were, you know, kind of tasked to develop a space where women in particular could come and have a place to process. When you drive up onto the Red Warrior Camp, it's right on the Cannonball River, and there's just like all these teepees and fires, and then you drive down into the main entrance, and there's this like two sides of the road are just covered with flags from tribes and nations that are offering solidarity and support. And when we got there, there was maybe 100 flags. And when I left, there was probably over 200 flags of both tribal nations and other indigenous communities all over the world were offering support and solidarity reflected in these flags. We wanted to be in the most center part of the camp as we could, and we found a spot and put up a flag, made a flag, and set up camp. And we had gotten donations of a lot of reproductive health supplies, and we had all kinds of tents and extra tents and extra sleeping bags and rolls and everything like that. And we just started setting them up. And then within an hour, we had women coming to our camp asking if they could come hang out with us and if they could have a place to stay. And then within the maybe a week, we had 10 women camping with us, and we had like 8 children there at one point, and 2 dogs and a horse. And a lot of relationships were built very quickly. You know, these are relationships that, even though I was only there for a short period of time, that I feel like I'll hold forever. We had a lot of conversations about misogyny and patriarchy. And there was these teenage girls who would come into camp and they'd be like, what's the difference between masculinity and misogyny? And we'd be like, sit down, girls, it's gonna be a while. But they were like, interested in having these conversations. And we had a lot of zines and things like that we offered. And we just make coffee and tea and sit around and talk and share. And then every weekend we'd go around the camp and pass out condoms and let them know that we were there and where we were. There was probably 60 police officers in riot gear in 2 rows. At the end of the rally, we turned around and we faced the police officers and we sang a respect song to them, and then we sang the Strong Woman song to them. And then a number of the women who were part of this group turned around and talked to the police officers about what it means to respect our Mother Earth and what it means to respect women and what it means to engage in this way, and that the purpose of these actions is to not just support Standing Rock, the people of Standing Rock, but to support humanity. Again, here was this moment where these women, just women, turn around and confronted armed police officers in riot gear and sang them a song of respect. That was really transformative. And those police officers had no idea what to do. They were so uncomfortable. They were like kind of moving around and dancing, you know, not dancing like, but, you know, they didn't know what to do. They were so uncomfortable. And, you know, and then we turned around, we left, and we went back to camp. This is also a youth-led movement. It was, you know, a number of Standing Rock youth that ran from Standing Rock to Washington, D.C., to gain awareness about what was going on at Standing Rock. There's a youth council at Standing Rock that advise the greater council on what they would like to see done and how they would like to see it done. And so although, you know, there's still elders and there's still men who are kind of taking leadership roles, it's still guided by women and by youth. I think that in 50 or 100 years, people are going to look back at this moment at Standing Rock, whatever the outcome is, they're going to look at this. There's going to be some knowledge that's gained or shared in the way that we engage in civil disobedience, in nonviolent direct action. I think that people are going to look back and know that the Standing Rock people were not just standing up for their land or their water or their people, that they were standing up for humanity and that they are putting their lives and freedom on the line for the betterment of all humanity, of the planet. And I think that that's a significant shift in the way that we engage in direct action, in the way that we are confronting colonialism, essentially. And I think that it's going to have the impact that it has because of the involvement of women and children in this movement.
You can connect with us on the KBOO website, kboo.fm/bread and roses. There you can access our podcasts and share feedback or show ideas. Like us on Facebook, KBOO Bread and Roses. And we're on Twitter @Bread and Roses Radio.
This has been, as always, a really great show. Having everyone live in studio. Thanks, Cheryl, Poochie, Celeste.
And it's so great to finally have Poochie with
finally
us.
Finally here.
Yes.
I was mentioning to Cheryl, I was like, I joined the collective in August, I think it was, and it's my first time in the studio.
Yay.
I feel terrible.
So worth it. So worth the wait. I have been so grateful, if we just have to say about the things that we have been grateful with our, I don't know what to say, like with this year. I mean, I'm just grateful that we've gotten through the year.
Secular amen.
I'm grateful that you can say secular amen and it is okay and safe to say that.
And we know, you know.
At this point in history.
That was just saying I needed to have that inclusion of Danica Brown in this particular recap of 2016, because the thing that I'm proudest most about what we've been able to cover is to, it's not the only time. We also talked to Jack Maelstrom at Rose City Native Radio also about Standing Rock, and we're going to keep talking about Standing Rock because it is not over.
They're still there.
We still have our president elect that could change everything again for us. And literally, this happens every show, actually. Like, what just happened, the sigh in the room. And I think it's been hard to really feel like you can get through the day, let alone 2017, in 2 days. And so I would like to end with something. We're not going to get to it right then, but later on, we're going to end with a little tiny little tribute to Debbie Reynolds, even though ordinarily I do try to include female or non-binary musicians for our shows. This is going to be Gene Kelly singing later. And it feels like if you come back to it, find it on YouTube, it's that part in Singing in the Rain, which is one of my favorite movies, that he is kind of singing to her. And it's
I'm getting goosebumps.
We needed that feel good. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure Gene Kelly was there to greet her as well. So that's a beautiful tribute.
We're like smile crying.
Smile crying.
Smile crying. I mean, so many thanks, honestly, to our engineer, Adam. Many thanks, as always, to our evening public affairs director, Lisa Loving. We're going to be saying this only one more time next Friday as we bid Lisa goodbye. But also, happy freaking birthday, Lisa. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. Lisa. Happy birthday. I don't know you, but happy birthday.
We have given her tributes in person. We've sang the song, did the stuff, put the cake out. But one more time, happy birthday, Lisa Loving. And that was our show. We had a lot of ups and downs in the show, in the in the year. And I would like to say we're only going to go up.
Yeah, we're just getting started. That's what 2016 is, just getting us ready for 2017. Yeah.
We're ready for this one. Oh, let's like buckle in. Okay.
Also, it's going to snow on Sunday, so.
That's what they say.
Well, see, this is the thing. Let's all just watch Singing in the Rain on Sunday then. Thank you. Good night.
Now that you have the proper setting, can you say it?
I'll try. Life was a song. You came along, I've laid awake the whole night through. If I but dared to think you cared, this is what I'd say to you. You were meant for me. And I was meant for you. Nature patterned you.
has done. You were all the sweet things, all love in one. You're like a plaintive melody that never lets me free. But I'm content. The angels must have sent you, and they meant you just for me.
This is KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, all community radio, all the time.
Give to KBOO today during our end-of-year match. Wrapping up December 31st, donations from all new and increasing members will be matched one-to-one up to $15,000 from the Collins Foundation and SSI Shredding Systems. Give an extra gift today or become a new member and your membership will be doubled to support independent community media and citizen journalism at KBOO. Thank you.
Join KBOO Community Radio and Sean Stewart on Friday, December 30th from 8 p.m. to midnight as we end the year with a live music extravaganza, potluck, and ladies' jam. We will be featuring the avant-garde experimentalism of the Institute for Creative Dying